Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we interview founders who have bought companies, sold companies, taken their companies public, and are creating innovative products for the marketplace. Today, we are joined by Sean Baer. He's an accomplished CEO, CTO, entrepreneur, and academic with over 25 years of experience in business strategy, data analytics, and public safety. He holds a Master's of Business Administration from the University of Denver, Daniels College of Business, and a Bachelor's of Science in Justice Studies, Computer Science from Arizona State University. Currently, Sean serves as the CEO of Nuri AI, a platform that transforms how people create events and cultivate meaningful personal and professional relationships. In addition to his role at Nuri, he's the CTO of Sworn AI, a cutting-edge analytical software company that leverages artificial intelligence to help serve and protect those who serve and protect us. Sean's work extends beyond the tech sphere. He's also a professor of strategy and economics at the Brigham Young University Marriott School of Business. Welcome, Sean, to the Founders Odyssey podcast. I'm excited to get to know you a little bit better today.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you walked in here and you gave me a book, and I was truly appreciative of that. So is that really indicative of your personality? Are you a giver?
I try to be a giver. I try to not think about myself as often as possible. Sometimes that gets pretty hard to do, but the book is How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's just a book that has always been a sort of a cornerstone for me and how to think, and a mindset of looking for ways to help others, to know about others, to build relationships with others. Because in the number of years in business that I've been in, I've found that it's all about relationships.
That's really true. Mm-hmm. I ask everyone before we really get started here is, what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
I think the big part of it is risk, willing to take risk. People have ideas right and left. I was speaking to a student yesterday who actually, in the course of our 30-minute conversation, pitched me three ideas he had for business, where all three of them I thought, man, that could actually take off. Those are great ideas. And I think an entrepreneur is the person who takes that next step, who is willing to take that risk to say, I'm going to pursue this idea, this interest, this dream, and make something of it. Everybody has ideas, but it's the person who actually executes them that becomes, in my mind, the entrepreneur, willing to take that risk and willing to go into the unknown. Mm.
Many of the answers we've gotten, and there are commonalities between entrepreneurs, right? And I've never got that exact answer, but that was good because it's true, though, risk. And some people are more risk adverse, but all the others want to jump into it because they know the reward could be big.
No risk, no reward.
So I like that personality. So let's get into a little bit because, you know, you did actually bring a book and you gave it to me as a giver. So let's talk a little bit about the people that influenced you in your past to be able to set the stage for you now as an adult.
Well, that's a great question. I have reflected on that over the last couple of years. I'm 54 years old right now. You mentioned that I've been in business for 25 years. And it took me probably a few decades to figure out really what got me to where I am. And it is this notion of being able to serve others, being able to build relationships with others. And that's what's giving me my success all these years. I'd like to take credit for it, but truthfully, as I reflected back and I looked at every pivotal moment in my life, there was somebody else who was there to provide me an opportunity, open a door, make an introduction, whatever it was. And so that book is sort of indicative of the way that I now view my path forward, but also a reflection upon what I've thought about what made me successful in the past, too.
So was it through a good family that you had support, or what has been the one of the biggest driving factors for the quote-unquote success that you're seeing? And then, so that's number one. And then right on the second portion of that question is, what does actual success mean to you? So,
yeah, I've had good family around me to support me and to encourage me to do things. I think I've always been taught to try and to have grit, and that there's no such thing as failure. Those are opportunities to learn and to improve and to get better. Playing sports, I think, actually helps out a lot with that. And I was in numerous sports growing up as a child, and you learn failure pretty quick in sports. And I think it's your attitude of how you approach that failure that allows you to sort of have this mentality that transfers into business quite easily. And so that's one of the sort of factors that I've thought have been a big part of my life. And then, of course, as I've begun to, you know, grow in business, I've found that there have been certain, I wouldn't call them mentors per se, but just relationships in business and in life, whether it's the hockey team I played on and being able to open up and ask questions about a business from my fellow hockey mates, or it was asking a relative a question about business or bouncing an idea off of, but just not being afraid to ask questions and to be vulnerable and offer up, hey, here's where I'm at right now, here's where I'm struggling, here's what, have you ever come across this? And then as I've gotten more sort of seasoned or a little more wisdom under my belt, I've started to now actually seek out those people who could be the people who could help me achieve my goals and put myself in a position to help others achieve their goals. Yeah. So it's really about that.
Tell me more about the journey. Like, okay, so I'm a founder. I'm somebody who, you know, maybe I've already achieved some success, but yet I still have butterflies when I want to go up and talk to somebody or reach out. So walk me through that process of, you know, being assertive and then reaching out to that mentor who you think is maybe 10 times, you know, 10 times what you are. How do you go about reaching out to that person?
So the first part about that is the not having relationship arrogance, and it works both ways. So one of the things I've come to understand is that when other people approach me and want to ask me questions about business because they might see that I, you know, have some title or I'm teaching a class or something, I don't look at that as, oh, what could they do for me? Or, oh, you know, I that there's some sort of relationship arrogance there. Everybody's on the same level and we can learn from everybody. I learn from my students, frankly, as much as they learn from me. There really is opportunities at every turn to learn from everybody you encounter with. Being an introvert, I got to tell you, it's not easy. So I had to push myself beyond those bugaboos and the things that I still have, which is an introversion. I don't like speaking in public, yet I teach classes and I do lectures and I do presentations, but I still don't necessarily want to do that. That's not my favorite thing to do. So you just have to push yourself beyond it, knowing that you're trying to offer somebody something, you're trying to provide them some value and see if they can add you value back. In terms of how to approach them, it usually is through some offer of value first. I try to not just ask or say, hey, look, I'd love for you to be my mentor, because I put myself in their perspective to say, well, one, I respect their time, and I want to know if my questions are going to cause them to not be able to action and do the things that they want to do, and I'm now, you know, sort of impeding them. So I want to always bring something to the table, and that is, okay, what can I offer to this person? What can I add value to them? Could I make an introduction? Could I go watch their podcast? Can I make recommendations? Whatever it is, there are things that I'm looking for to be able to add to that other person too.
Yeah. Yeah. They call it the bug. You know what the bug is?
And no, go.
Okay, well, it's the entrepreneur bug.
Yeah.
And when did you catch it?
I caught it when I started selling software, the software that I developed back in the early 90s. So I wrote a piece of software way back in the day. I was what's called a crime analyst, and I was my position was to predict crime. So my job was to look at thousands upon thousands of police records and pull out a series of cases that I thought were related and then study them to the point where I could predict where and when the offender was going to strike next. And I automated that feature, that function. And that software that I wrote way back in the day was really meant to only make me a better analyst. I didn't write it, in fact, to start a company. I wrote it to solve a problem I had. And that's the biggest entrepreneurial sort of nugget I could offer your audience, or just in terms of the way that I view entrepreneurship, is you should always be looking for problems that you might have a solution for. Therein lies every business. So for me, it was I wanted to be more efficient and effective at catching criminals. And so I wrote software, because I was a software developer, to allow me to do that. It just so happens that then evolved into a company that other agencies started seeing. Well, how are you guys doing so good at catching people? And of course, the department was like, hey, you should call, you know, talk to Bear. He's doing some software thing that he's figured out, and that's how we're doing that. Of course, the agencies would say, well, we want to buy it. And that was like, wow, I have something on my hands here. And that's really what started it. The bug came from being able to help others expand that capability, because I wanted to be able to, you know, be better at that job, but I wanted others to be better at that job too, because they had the same problem that I had. So that was sort of the bug aspect of it.
Many people talk about enjoying the process, and I believe that the most success comes from continuing to enjoy the process and not only looking at the end result. And it's funny, because if you were to look at the end result of your software, you know, being sold and, you know, multimillion dollar business and all the things at the very end, well, I think you might have been a little distracted based on the potential outcome, right?
Yeah.
So walk me through that process that you take as a business owner. So we're speaking to now other people out there in the audience that may be starting a business, they may have a business, and they're getting a little stuck because they're not seeing the process and enjoying that. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Wow, that's a deep question. That's insightful, though, too. You really do have to begin with the end in mind. And with my last company, I didn't. I created it because I was solving a problem I had, and it just began to evolve. At some point, though, I did see the end in mind, and I saw what I wanted to have happen. And interestingly enough, if it's at that point that I discovered what the real value of the company was. So I had written analytical software, high-end, predictive analytics, AI, the whole nine yards. And what we discovered, though, was the value of the company wasn't in these really cool analytical techniques we created in graphs and charts and predictive analytics and all this. It was in the data that we had, because we had amalgamated agency data from all over the U.S. and, frankly, the world, not in the same system. And that allowed agencies to see each other's data to be able to solve cross-jurisdictional problems. So what I found was it wasn't the analytics that we had that was awesome. It was the data. Yes. And so once I understood where my value of my company was, then I could begin to see the end in mind. So instead of trying to sell to IBM because they wanted predictive analytics, I instead sold, as I did, to LexisNexis because it was about the data for them. Okay. And I also sold too because I saw that they could bring their data to the table combined with our analytics and their capabilities and, in fact, be able to do even more good with our technology.
Talk to me a little bit about seeing the end in mind,
yeah,
but yet still having a focus on the process.
That's actually what gave me the focus, I think, because at that point, it's no different than when you play sports and you see the goal line or the basket or whatever you're trying to, you know, have as your score. You see that. Now I have a path to success. Whereas if I didn't have that, it became, okay, what am I doing, right? Mm-hmm. If you go through life not having any sort of goal, then you're not going to have any sort of success because you don't know what to measure your success against. So you need to have these goals.
I like what you just said there. There's a path to success. And you know what that really means is you have more clarity on where you're going.
100%.
Speak to us a little bit about how you've developed a systematic way to create clarity within the companies that you create and with the people that you mentor.
Clarity. A big part of that is a little bit comes from a book that I've read back in the day, Nail It, Then Scale It. You really have to be hyper-focused on what you're doing and not get distracted. There comes a point in every business person or owner's journey where you start hearing a lot of feedback about your product. It would be cool if it did this. You should do this. Hey, why don't you add this feature? And you begin to find yourself not, you know, focused on truly what you've already determined is the real value of your company or the product you're trying to deliver, the problem you're trying to solve. So I think one is just hyper-focus on what it is, you know, what is your goal? Stick to the goal, stick to the path. The other is just leveraging strategies and how to do that. One of the things that I've discovered in business is a way to achieve that success is actually through the help of others. Obviously, you have, you know, people around you, and whether they're fellow employees or whomever they are, mentors, advisors, those will help you achieve success. But the biggest path to success that I've discovered is actually through strategic alliances and partnerships. So as a business owner now, my pursuit of the goal is different than it was 20 years ago, where the pursuit of the goal was iterations on the technology or the software or the product. Now it's looking at the end game and saying, what partnerships, what strategic alliances do I need to be able to achieve success and that goal? And that's what it's about for me right now. So a lot of it is, let's say we're new to a company or to a business, I've just started out. One of the quickest ways to gain market share and growth is in fact through others. You gain a good strategic alliance or good partnership or a good affiliate, and they can exponentially push your company forward versus you just trying to slog it yourself.
Let's talk about the various roles within a company and then the phases of scale. Let's talk about there's the CEO, COO, integrators, marketing. So look at the different departments now, and then let's engineer a successful growth of a company based on understanding those positions.
Okay. You really have insightful questions. Those are great. One of the things as it relates to what you just asked that I figured out about 15 years into my first company is the founder can struggle as a CEO. And I was that person. I was a founder. I was the inventor, you know, sort of the person who came up with that concept and then began to find myself needing acumen to become a leader, a manager, a CEO, somebody who understands the business, the financials, the tax implications, everything that goes along with the business. That's an interesting transition. And I think every founder needs to have an awareness that that day will come. And that day was coming right at the point that I was selling the last company, where I found myself realizing I've gotten it this far, but I don't know that I'm the CEO to take it to this next level. And so what I started thinking at that moment was I need a CEO as a founder, and then allow me to be sort of visionary, product and customer centric, and allow somebody to really do what a true CEO does, was execute on the study of the business, the growth of the business, the operations of the business, the internals of the business. And that's what a real good CEO, I think, does.
Talk to me about how you cast vision and how you get yourself in a position to dream. Because as that visionary, there has to be this quiet time. Like, I mean, I have my ways, but I'm just curious as to how you get in a position where... So let's just take it like this. So I get in a position typically where, this is kind of weird, but I'll lay in the ground. I'll like just lay on the ground and I'll just say anything and everything is possible in life.
It is.
Everything that I ever think of is possible, and it's just a matter of who.
100%.
And then I go into, you know, the next step of my business iteration, or, you know, I take moonshots daily with my thought process so that I can go and actually make those moonshots physically.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about what you do and how you get into that position.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And in fact, I think every person's different. So my way of sort of not being distracted by the noise of the everyday grind is as often as I can, which is usually at best once a week, usually in the weekends and definitely not when there's snow on the ground, I drive into the mountains. That's my release. That's where I just turn on the music and I've just got the hum of the engine and the beauty of the mountains, and thoughts begin to come to me, and I can think through the problems that I'm experiencing, not only in business, but in life too, and that's where I'm able to sort of allow my brain the time and the focus to solve those problems. So for me, it's driving in the mountains. For other people, it could be meditation, it could be actually working out, can give them that hyper-focus because it's sort of just one thing they're focused on, which allows other thoughts to come in and be able to be worked on. I can't do that if I'm in an environment where there's a lot of things going on.
Sure.
If it's the busyness of the day, the emails, you know, chirping and the Slack is pinging and all that, I'm donezo. I can't do it.
So true.
Yeah.
Stephen Kotler he's got something where he's done a lot of research on flow state. So for those of you guys out there, just make sure that you look up Stephen Kotler, look at flow state. And ways that you can get into flow. It's typically an activity that takes a little above average skill level, above average focus, that then will allow you to get into that zone and really zone out of the stresses of life. So Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're currently working on and what you're excited about building in the year 2024.
Yeah. What I'm working on now is two things.
Okay.
So you mentioned that I teach at the university.
Yes.
I love being able to do that. I get inspired and motivated. I'm incredibly bullish on the next generation of students that are about to hit the market. I think they're going to be amazing. And so I get an energy and excitement from that. And in fact, sometimes they, as you teach, one of the neat things that you get is the ability to further articulate what your understanding of a topic is or a subject matter. And so I'll even go teach and then go home and realize, wow, I need to implement that in my own business or do that right now. So, and not be that person that that fits that mantra that is, you know, those who teach can't. You know, there's that whole thing was kind of funny. So I always try and do the best I can. But the two big things that I'm working on, in fact, go back to something that I've discovered over the last couple of years, maybe over the last decade, where it's really what drives me and what is my purpose in life. And my purpose in life is to really build communities and protect communities. And you could look at my history from when I was still a student at Arizona State University in the early 90s, graduating, and I wanted to be in public safety. I wanted to be able to protect people. That was my big thing. And my company was a result of that effort there. But that was at my core. That's what got me up. That was my passion. And I was able to marry my business acumens and skill set and interests along with those passions, which I think allows you to get over sometimes those humps. And so that's one of the things I've always been doing. And I've also liked building communities, which is all about relationships and whether they're events or classrooms or, you know, whatever they are. And so with those two sort of tenets, being able to build communities and protect communities, building community is all about NURI. NURI is short for nourish. And so what we're doing there is we're trying to help people build communities. And the way people build communities is, one, through events, so they can host an event and begin to bring people to it. We want to be able to foster a sense of community amongst those event goers. So that's, they get to know each other. There's technology that allows that interaction and that spark of maybe some interest and ingenuity. And then there's also the follow-on. The hardest part about building a community is that once they go to an event, after the event, everybody leaves and kind of forgets about everybody. So there's a lot of lost opportunity from building a community unless you have the necessary follow-on and catch-up from a community, from that event. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with NURI. And then you mentioned Sworn.ai. I was asked to help with this company, and what we're doing, it's near and dear to my heart. It's protecting police officers from the mental and the physical and the emotional ailments and stresses that they now face, that I encountered when I was an officer, because I was a police officer as well. And it's through technology, being able to use biometrics and wearables along with data to be able to determine, hey, Nathan, you might need a day off, or you're doing great, or hey, let's make sure your sleep is a little bit better, and setting goals from a fitness, from a sleep, from a nutrition, and from a what we're calling an experiential perspective, which are all the things that they experience, being able to help them there. So those are the two big things that I'm working on right now, those two companies. Yes, I'm overextended. Yes, it's hard, but it's rewarding because those two things also fit my passion.
Well, we also talked about team, and it sounds like, you know, based on your experience, you've become more wise to be able to delegate to elevate.
Yeah.
You know, and do you have some people that are currently helping you in various areas and teams and whatnot?
Both companies, we've got great teams, and good. That's what it's all about. You know, going back to the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, it is about getting a network, a building relationships with people that you can raise up, you can make better through your interaction with them. You can add value to them, and they in turn could maybe add value to you as well. So it's all about surrounding yourself with those people. The people who can be honest with you and tell you like it is, be able to have capabilities and resources that you do not have. That's a big aspect too. The last thing I've ever had is people in either any of the companies that I've worked in or for or owned that were like me. I don't want like me's. I want people who are not like me, because I want a diverse group of people who can all bring awesome ideas and all sort of contribute, all pistons in the engine firing. Yeah.
This has been an excellent podcast, a lot of different angles and perspectives that you've been able to provide us today. And, you know, I'm very appreciative of that. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Nathan.
How can we as a group, you know, and those out there that are listening, how can we support, you know, both of your companies?
Sure.
And tell us where to look up what it is you're doing, and then how maybe people can get best get in hold of you or be able to follow your work.
Thank you for that. So with Sworn, it's sworn.ai. Mm-hmm. I've always been a big proponent of artificial intelligence, been doing it since 1994. And the big thing we're trying to do there is, of course, help police officers. So the best thing your listeners can do is, the next time they encounter a police officer, which is usually not pleasant for most people, so if you, in fact, do see one out in public, the best thing you could possibly do for that officer, which is the best thing you could do for me, is just say, thank you for your work in protecting us. And as simple as that. It wouldn't surprise me if they begin crying on the spot, because they rarely get that. And so just that piece of appreciation would go a long way. So that's what I would say there for my fellow brothers and sisters and for the company. And just an awareness that we're trying to help officers out. The other aspect with Nuri, I would say it's similar. Go to nuri.ai. You'll find a little about up there. Click on that. That'll take you to our webpage where you can learn more about it. You can download the app. And what I would say is, download the free app and use the free app to nurture your relationships. Think about people that you want to be able to serve in some way, whether it's sending them a nice note, thanking them for something they did, or just to wish them a well, or a birthday, or have a nice day. And then you can set frequencies in there. So I want to reach back out to you in a week so that I don't forget, because we tend to forget. And if you forget, you'll get busy, and then your relationships begin to falter a little bit. So that would be what I would suggest people do there is use the app to make you a better person.
Well, you've certainly made me a better person just listening to you for a half an hour. So
I appreciate that.
We appreciate you coming on the Founders Odyssey podcast. And if you out there have enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share it with your friends, and also subscribe if you haven't yet. So once again, thanks, Sean. We can't wait to have another guest on. And guys, we'll see you soon.
Thank you.